Hey, drama listeners, before we get to the show, I want to tell you about our bonus content platform called Patreon. You know it. You should love it. It's a $5 a month subscription that will help Connor and I continue to churn out gag-worthy content, including our entire summer lineup of Pride guests and everything beyond. Today's episode with Damon Gillespie is incredible. And if you loved it, you loved him, there is even more content that only our Patreon subscribers have access to. All month long, we featured other independent podcasts that came on and had a little kiki with us only for our Patreon listeners. You know, we might be kicking back some glasses of wine and chatting about Broadway, theater, love, life, pop culture. Are you gagged? Are you happy? Come on, check it out. Support us. Support you. Bye.
Press play.
Curtain up and now we're in.
It's time to take a spin.
The shade and tea to spill.
Ooh, drama. Oh, that's a tweet. Did they book? Who got nom?
They option no.
Oh, I'm not well.
What star will we talk to today?
Oh, that's a gag, honey. Say no more. Drama.
Drama.
Welcome to Drama, a podcast that covers theater,
pop culture,
love,
and life
in New York City
and
the world. I'm Connor McDowell.
And I'm Dylan McDowell. And this is our second attempt at recording with our guest today.
Yes, because we had real drama.
We did.
And it wasn't our guest's fault. It was,
no.
Wasn't our fault.
It wasn't yours for a change.
It was the Wi-Fi. And we were sort of, we're at a crossroads of our internet's completely gone. We can't watch TV. We can't be on our phones. We can't be on the computer. What does one do with their time?
It was a puzzling scenario. But what I will say is, thank God our guest was so kind.
Oh my God, so gracious.
If it happened with anybody else, I would have been just, but he was so generous, so thoughtful. And here we are again, one week later.
I will say we were like really ready. This is some BTS here behind the scenes, but you know, we spend like the hour before the pod really, you know, I guess I call it like my own little warm up. You know, we do a little extra research. We might like listen to them on an interview or them singing or something. We really get ready. And then the fact that we were about to start recording and the interview had to be rescheduled was the biggest case of blue balls I've ever experienced.
And you've mentioned other cases in the past on the pod, so we'll leave it at that.
Right, right.
But I think, you know, because this has been so long awaited, we just bring him in.
I do think so. And also, happy summer.
Yeah. When this is released, I might be in Myrtle Beach, which is kind of random and fun.
Yeah. I'm jealous as hell. I don't have any plans.
I'll either be just about to leave or just coming back. So.
Oh my God. I'm so jealous.
All right. Our guest today is a bona fide star of stage and screen. This Southern boy made his Broadway debut in the cast of Newsies as Buttons. And he then went on to appear in Disney's Aladdin. He was even a part of Alliance Theater's world premiere of The Prom, directed by Casey Nicholaw, as well as The Music Man at the Kennedy Center, starred alongside Peter Dinklage and Cyrano at Goodspeed, and more. He appeared as Chino in Carnegie Hall's West Side Story, In the Heights at Pittsburgh CLO, and so many more credits. He was featured on Inside Amy Schumer's Emmy Award-winning sketch, Girl, You Don't Need Makeup, before he starred as Robbie Thorne in the much-loved and Gone Too Soon show, Rise, on NBC. You'll know him from his appearance on Empire, his recurring role on The Society, and most recently for starring as Caleb in Netflix's ballet drama, Tiny Pretty Things. He is a dog daddy, a Twitch king, and too talented for words. Please welcome to Drama,
Damon Gillespie.
Wow, you guys really did your research. Okay, y'all are playing. I was like, wow, there's a lot on there.
I know. And you know, I skipped around while reading your bio. So if it was choppy at all, I apologize, but you've done a lot.
Apparently. Like, I'm not kidding. I was legit like, damn, that's a lot of stuff. Like, I've been very blessed. I have really been blessed.
Blessed and highly favored.
Thank you. That's not on Anastasia. This was literally a journey through the past.
Uh-huh. It is.
I love it. Damon, thanks again for being so accommodating with our Wi-Fi issues. We've legitimately been so excited to do this with you for so long. We've had you on our list forever. So thanks for joining the drama fam.
Absolutely. I'm so excited. I love doing like podcasts or honestly just sitting and talking. So
oh, yeah. We even got into it a little bit before we jumped into things, but we are curious, just in the state of our world, are you well?
every day is a little different. That's a, that's kind of where that is. You know, the past year was insane for everybody, obviously, 100% me included. And it's, you know, it's getting a little better. But I mean, in I'd say about 80 to 85% of the time, I'm well.
Good. And right now you're back in New York and
yeah,
things are slowly starting to open up again. And so that's good. Yeah. I'm glad to hear that you're well as can be.
Wait, what neighborhood do you live in? If you are allowed to reveal it on the pod, we can always cut this later.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm in the Heights.
Nice.
Oh, yes.
I love it up here. Oh. I really do.
Were you one of the lucky few who got to see In the Heights, the movie, like preview?
Wait, that was people got to see it in the previews? Oh,
yes. Like, I don't know if it was digitally or if people all went to like some theater somewhere, but a lot of our followers and friends were tweeting about it.
I'm so mad.
I know.
I'm very jealous.
This movie has brought me nothing but pain and suffering. I swear.
I know. Well, why aren't you in it? I think is the first.
That's
question.
Exactly what I was about to say. So I begged and pleaded. I reached out to my team. I was like, please reach out to them. I was like, I want to be a part of this so bad. I love this musical and I want to do it. They were like, well, they already have Benny cast. Mind you, this was like 2 years ago.
Okay.
So before they even started filming, you know, when they were like rumors of this, they already had Benny cast. And I was like, look, I'm prepubescent basically to to the Broadway world. And so I'm not looking for Benny. They were like, well, they also weren't really thinking Sonny. I was like, have you looked at my resume? Not my team, but like anybody in casting, like I'll take Graffiti Pete. Like, yeah. let me go do my thing. And they were like, my team was like, oh, we didn't even think about that. And I was like, I can't do this anymore.
You're like, my team is now fired.
Right. No, I love my team, but I never, the casting was also like, we didn't even think about that. And I was like, you're going to make me have a nervous breakdown.
Yeah.
And so I never really heard back. And then the trailer came out and it looked beautiful. So that pissed me off because I know it's going to be amazing.
Oh yeah.
And I'm going to cry. And I'm going to be pissed off because I wanted so bad to be a part of that. And now people have already seen it. I can't win with this freaking musical movie. I just can't win.
Now, when you did it in Pittsburgh, who did you play Benny?
No, I was Graffiti Pete.
Okay.
A pivotal role.
That's what I'm saying. I'm like, let me do it.
A spoiler alert for anyone who hasn't seen In the Heights, but Graffiti Pete plays a pivotal role for the finale. You know what I mean?
Yep.
He really does.
He creates the reason for Usnavi to stay. Period. Yes. I was like, I want that responsibility.
Right.
If not for Graffiti Pete, I don't know where the musical would have ended, you know?
Truly. What would have happened? Would he have gotten with Vanessa? What would Sonny be doing? Like,
God, In the Heights is unreal.
Wait, I have something else to say that is a mild In the Heights spoiler. So if you're listening to this and you don't want to be spoiled of something that happens allegedly in the movie, don't listen. But I heard they cut like 5 songs from the show. And I don't know if you want to know which ones, but like, big moments like the song that Nina sings after Abuela Claudia dies, Everything I Know, is allegedly cut.
I heard Hundreds of Stories is cut.
Hundreds of Stories was that. See, that, oh my God, what? I get that for movies, things have to change and you can't always do all 20 songs in 2.5 hours because there has to be other things that happen. But
right.
That made me so upset. Like, and the song that Nina's dad sings, cut.
Not a new deal.
Yeah.
Not a new deal.
And it's Jimmy Smits. I think Jimmy Smits is playing that role.
Yeah,
I don't know.
He
I'm,
is.
Just, I'm sad. I guess they know what they're doing.
Well, I will say, as someone who's like done the show, the other two songs, the first two songs that you mentioned, I was like, I don't even really remember those two songs. And then I was like, oh, wait, I do. Okay, I do remember that. And it's okay. I'm okay for those two. But like Inutil, which is the dad song, I think half of it could have been cut.
Yes. And they usually do that. They'll like make the songs like a minute and a half, 2 minutes
right.
in movie musicals.
Yeah. Those, especially those solos, like, and I think because in my head, when I look at that musical, I think that they did, cause it was like one of his first ones he ever wrote. So right. in the, you know, it probably was like this long and they're like, we need to make it 2.5 hours. So it's like, okay, well then I'll add some more songs and we get those songs and it's like, they're great, but it doesn't really progress the story forward. Which
I get what you're saying.
You know what I mean? So as when I look at it for film, I'm like, those can go.
Yeah.
You know, no tea, no shade. They can go.
All tea, no shade. That's right. Damon, you are a Southern boy. I love when your accent comes out. Remind me again where you're from.
From Chattanooga, Tennessee.
Okay.
Yeah. Wow.
I've only ever been to Sevierville.
Sevierville.
And I was actually there last summer.
Yeah.
It was great. We got in a car accident on the way down, but we still made it.
Good. I'm so sorry about the car accident.
Oh, yeah. And no one was hurt.
That's good.
Thankfully. But my boyfriend's car was totaled. I think I told the story on the pod. I don't remember. But we had a great time in the mountains. It was like that period of quarantine when people were like doing like safe vacations. Mm-hmm. So like an isolated trip to the mountains.
Yep. Right.
Like
the Smokies.
People in your pod was. Yeah. So that was great. So is where you grew up, was that near there?
It's about 2.5 hours away. But my family, so there's three parts of Sevierville. We call it Gatlinburg because it basically is three cities. It's Pigeon Forge, Gatlinburg, and Sevierville, and they all kind of run on a strip. So like Dollywood is there, Whitewater is there, which is just a water park, and then there's this literal, I'd say like 15 to 20 mile strip of just bowling, putt-putt, we call it putt-putt, but mini golf, horseback riding, breakfast and pancakes. Like, oh, I love going there.
There's huge pancake place. Ooh, it's a tourist trap dream, but I really love that kind of stuff.
It's like the South's own little Vegas.
Uh-huh. Oh, it's so fun. Yeah, they do like that Hatfield and McCoy, like live shows and stuff like that.
How fun.
And then so Dixie
fun.
Stampede, which is her like her live show, which is awesome. Oh, I love my state. I really do. Aww. I don't like how they act sometimes, but like, I love my state.
Hometown pride.
Yeah.
Speaking of your younger years, perhaps, we ask all of our guests about the moment they realized they wanted to jump into the ocean of the arts. And we call it the Ring of Keys moment, inspired by Fun Home's moment of recognition. But do you feel like you had a Ring of Keys moment when it came to loving, you know, music, theater, performing, anything like that?
100%. It's kind of a story though. So I've always been an active kid. My mom put me in Taekwondo when I was 2 because I started walking when I was 8 months old.
Young.
Yeah, very young. And so your boy loved the Power Rangers and still does, the original, the OG Power Rangers. Mm-hmm. And so I was running around like punching the couches and kicking and stuff. And my mom was like, absolutely not. If he's going to hurt somebody, he's going to actually kick some other 2-3 year old in the throat, and it's going to be a mess. So I've always been like an active kid. And so I started like Taekwondo. And then the next year I was in dance, and I had been dancing ever since. When I was in 6th grade, my mom was like, look, I know I also played every sport imaginable. She was like, I know that you love football, but your dad is like 5'6" and I'm 5'9". I don't see you being tall enough to be a football player. You are great at dance. You love singing. You love performing. I'm putting you in an art school. So she did. I resisted because I was like, no. But while I was there, funny enough, this teacher actually texted me this morning. My musical theater teacher from middle school, because it was 6 through 12. I was a ballet major with a musical theater minor, and I was in love with musical theater. So I was like, I'm changing my major. And I 100% just did that. And so all throughout middle school and high school, I was a musical theater major. Every year when you're in high school, you come to New York, you see shows, you take workshops, like it's amazing. And I came to see Billy Elliot. It was my very first show. And I'll never forget seeing Billy Elliot during the Angry Dance, and just the lights, the subwoofers, the tapping, the choreography on the riot shields, just like the anger, the angst, all of it, just the expression. I was like, that right there. I said, if I'm not doing that shit, I'm not doing it. Like, I'm not doing anything else. That was the moment I was like, I've got to be a performer. I remember it so vividly because one of my best friends who actually lives right down the road from me, he was sitting right beside me. He was like, I got to see you for your first Broadway show, dude. He's like, I gotta, and both of us afterward were like grabbing each other, and we went, what the fuck was that? That was so amazing. Like, we flipped out. That is 100% my Ring of Keys moment.
I love that moment. I don't think anyone's ever mentioned that before.
Mm-mm.
Billy Elliot has come up a couple of times recently. What a masterpiece. And the movie is great too, but
see, I grew up knowing about the movie, but I wasn't old enough to watch it yet. So I never watched it. I watched like the opening scene when he's bouncing on the ropes.
Yes.
And then my mom was like, all right, that's all you need to see. She's like, you can box and also dance. That's what I was trying to prove.
Yeah, because it's got some language in it. And it's pretty violent, if I remember, at times. But
oh, yeah.
And it's also like a complicated political piece.
Yeah.
In many ways.
Totally. Oh, my God. I cry every time in that movie.
Yeah.
It's different parts. But like there's the scene when the dad, or wait, is it the brother or the dad? And they're like going, they stop striking and they go back to work. And it's like this emotional mm-hmm. scene where he like runs to him. I forget. Yeah. I'm like completely getting the
plot I think it's
wrong.
The dad, because the father and the older brother are like constantly at like butting heads because of the strikes. I'm pretty sure.
Yeah.
Right?
No, you're
it's
right.
It's been a long time since I've seen it.
Yeah. Oh, it's so good.
I think Will Chase played the brother and so did Santino Fontana.
Wait, on Broadway or in the movie?
On Broadway.
Okay. that would make sense.
I'm trying to remember when that was on Broadway, but then when immediately after graduating from school, did you go into Newsies?
No. So that was in 2009. Because I always remember my years in school were the years that I was in school. So like I was in first grade in 2001, graduated in, you know, my 12th year was my graduate was 2012. So
us too.
I think we're the same. Too. We're the same age.
Yeah. 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 So yeah. It was 2009 when I saw Billy Elliot, but my senior year of high school. So this is the saga of Newsies. My senior year of high school, one of my musical theater directors is like Alan Menken's like right-hand man at this point.
Oh, wow.
Like he works on him with everything. And this was like the start of that relationship. And they were like, hey, we're trying to diversify our cast in Newsies. You should come up to New York. You need to come up to New York and audition. And they gave me like a month to prep the stuff because this is my first audition ever professionally. So he's working with me. He's giving me, you know, he's like, you need to be able to know this and that. And so I'm like watching the performance on The View. I'm going through everything, watching the movie over and over. And I go up there and I audition and I got cut so hard. It just wasn't my time. My technique wasn't there. My voice was still like, I only hit puberty like a year and a half before that, man. Like it was a mess. So I didn't get it, but the casting director was kind enough to give me some feedback on what I need to do. He was like, you've got to work on your technique. That was the note. And I was like, all right, cool. So I was in ballet or jazz every day and went off to college in Chicago, came back the next year, ended up meeting one of my best friends, Giuseppe Bosilio, who got the role over me. I was pissed, but I'm fine now. And when I came back, I actually made it all the way to final callbacks because I had been working on my voice. So, you know, I could hit those notes finally. My technique was a little better. And afterward, my teacher was still a part of the show. And he said, all right. He's like, let's go to coffee. And I was like, I don't drink coffee yet, but I'll take some wings somewhere. And so we sat down and we talked and he was like, you're good. They love you. You need a little bit more work on your technique. He was like, basically your transitions. And I was like, awesome. Great. Next year, sophomore year of college, we have 8 a.m. ballet every day. Every day.
Tiny Pretty Things vibes.
Right. That, well, we'll get to that in a second.
Yeah.
But literally, I was in ballet because that was our curriculum. It was like, oh, you've got to go to 8 a.m. ballet. And it was like, awesome. I've got to go kill my ankles. Amazing.
Yeah.
But it worked. That year, I booked the tour and I was going to leave college and go, you know, I had the summer to prepare and I was going to leave college and go start Newsies the tour. And about a month after school ended, I'm in Chicago working at Chick-fil-A, trying to pay bills and doing a production of Carrie the Musical at this non-equity theater, which was so much fun. Everybody,
who were you?
I was Freddie.
Okay.
So if you've never done Carrie, you need to find a way to do it. It's so good. It's so bad, but it's so fun.
Is he the one that is he who dates Chris? Is that Freddie?
No, he's literally just like the morning announcements guy.
Okay.
No, the guy who's dating Chris is like a psychopath.
Yeah, he's crazy.
He's insane.
That'd be fun to play.
I would love to play that.
Yeah.
As soon as I turn 40, then I can play that role. Yeah. But while I'm doing that, we were in Tech Week and they were like, we need you for an immediate replacement for Broadway. And they were like, can you be here in like 2 days? And I said, no, I'm fucking broke. What do you mean? Can I be there in 2 days? Like, no. I was like, I'm working at Chick-fil-A, living in a living room, about to open a show. And I'm not trying to leave them high and dry and like burn bridges or whatever. Like,
right.
So they actually let me open the show, give the team some time to like find my replacement. And I was there in rehearsals. So we had that weekend. I left on Monday, June 3rd, and started rehearsals that night.
What a bittersweet experience.
Yeah.
Because getting to opening night of a show is the great journey up the mountain. And then you don't really get to celebrate that with your cast because you're probably freaking out otherwise.
Oh, there was so much going on. But thankfully, you know, I didn't have to focus on Newsies because I was like, I get there and they teach me everything, you know? Mm-hmm. So I actually got to like chill with my cast and just like kind of revel because we opened the show. And we all celebrated and all of us were, you know, having a drink afterward, having a good old time. And everyone was like, you know, congratulations. And I'm like, hey, like, this is our moment. We opened this show. We did something real weird in an intimate space. Like, congratulate me later. Like, let's celebrate this as a cast because we've really done something fun and like, let's celebrate each other. And then you can worship me afterward.
Very Robbie Thorne of you to be so generous and such a leader in that moment.
Someone was a big fan of that show.
I had to do a lot of refreshing because it was a few years ago now, but I did love that show. Okay, so wait, so when you're going to Newsies, is that its final summer then on Broadway?
Yeah, so the saga continues. Yeah, June 22nd, because my Broadway debut is 23rd. It's a Sunday and we're all getting ready to, you know, we do our fight call. They let me actually try it out because they do it like a couple of times so that I can get used to it. And then Jess does the fight call too, who I'm taking over for. And then right after we get done with fight call, they tell us that we're closing the show. So the day before I made my Broadway debut, they tell us we're closing the show.
Oh my God. Are you kidding me?
Not at all.
Did they tell you what date you were going to close?
Yeah. They told us, it was August because it was August 14th, I think was the closing show.
Okay.
So I got 2 months with the show, you know?
But once you're a newsie, everyone wants to fuck you for the rest of your life. It's like, do you know what I mean? Like,
no, but now I do. Now that you point it out, it makes sense.
Listen, the fansies are sexual fanatics and they are. I mean,
you want to talk about Ring of Keys moments for these young girls
and these young boys. I mean, everyone wants to fuck a newsie and some of us have. Wait, is that drama?
Wait, anyways.
That's some facts. David, Connor is not speaking anything except facts, okay?
David, so I'm realizing now we saw you then in Newsies.
Yeah.
Because we made the trip to New York that summer and we saw you guys like first week of August. So it was like Corey Cott and the whole crew. We were in the very last row of the mezzanine. What a great show. I freaking love Newsies. Yeah. I think it appeals to all ages. And getting to see it from the very last row actually I think was special because you can see every moment of that choreography.
Yep. Yeah.
And we had Jeff Calhoun on back in September.
Really? And,
he was so smart and so he just loves Newsies and he was able to share some insights into it. I'm sad it closed right at that summer, but the decision to close while it was still on top in many ways was really strategic on Disney's part.
It was. And, you know, oftentimes you have to remember that this is a business. And if it really, truly was just for the love of the, you know, just for the love of the game, so to speak, you'd see productions all over the place. And it didn't matter if it succeeded or if it bombed, you would see them everywhere. But this is a business. And as much as it sucked and as much as we thought we could have literally done another year, Disney had other shows that they wanted to put it there. And this is just from a inside outsider looking in, you know, sure. I'm not on the business side, but just looking at how Disney does their business, they don't like to have more than two shows on at a time.
Right.
And so, you know, you've got Lion King, which ain't going nowhere. Mm-hmm. And then you had Aladdin, which had just opened literally right beside Newsies. And right. both of them were doing pretty well. But if you take the attention off of Aladdin, this brand new show, which is a lot of money, there's a lot of effects that go into that show. It can lose money if it's spread too thin amongst the Disney audience. So this one has made us a lot of money. It went it was only supposed to be there for like 3 to 4 months and make us a right. lot of money. And then it ran for 2 years, made us even more money. Let's go out on a high. And let's switch the focus to the other shows and let's keep the money rolling in, which, you know, personally, I'm pissed professionally and like in a business standpoint, I got to respect it. I just have to.
And then it has a highly successful tour. They filmed it and it was in movie theaters. Now it's on Disney Plus. Is it on Disney Plus or Netflix?
Mm-hmm. It was on Netflix.
It was.
And now, mm-hmm. And I don't think it's on Netflix anymore. I think Disney was like, yank.
Yeah. Well, because it's such a profitable venture. Disney really knows how to move its money around and make the most out of any situation. I mean, for sure. Okay, so then you had this. Was it a good experience being in Newsies that summer? Like, was it a cool first foray into Broadway?
Yeah, it was. There was a lot of highs and some lows as well, because when you come into a show and the day before you join, they tell you you're closing. It's like, and this is not intentional and no one really planned for this, but you can't really join a family when the family is just trying to savor their last moments. So that was on that end, it was really tough. It was also physically completely different than what I was used to, because when you grow up dancing and performing and stuff, you're doing something different every single day.
Right.
And the body, it doesn't plateau, so to speak. And when you're doing something 8 shows a week, the same thing over and over, the body, for some odd reason, it just is, it can't handle it. It's like everything starts to get out of whack. So, or I guess because the other parts of the body aren't getting the muscle building part of it. It's just that one specific, I don't know. I don't really know the science behind it. I'm just making an educated guess, but it's tough on the body. And so those were the two biggest things that I struggled with, was like stamina and, you know, trying to really build connections. I ended up building them much later, but I also learned about stamina and how to build connections. Mm-hmm. You know, I had this mentality of like, oh, this is what the cool kids are doing. Let me do that. And now I'm like, no, if I vibe with you, I do. You know, if I don't, then I don't. And that's okay. We'll just remain colleagues. And I'm cool with that.
Yeah.
I also learned how to take better care of my body, my voice. And I got to fucking be on Broadway, man. In a show that like was Hamilton before Hamilton. You know, every single character had a trading card and had a fan account, and even the tiniest of characters like Buttons or not Romeo or Romeo or pick a character, Mush, like everybody knew who these people were. And we had a lot of influence on the Broadway community before this is the birth of social media, so we had a lot of influence. Because we had to create magic without magic every day, it became such a magical show.
Yeah, that's the rare Disney show that doesn't have some sort of a magical element. It was the choreography.
Right, exactly. And the music, like, we can't sleep on Alan Menken's music, dog. Ever. He's so good.
So good.
Oh yeah,
so good. In my memory, after Seize the Day happened, I feel like there was a standing ovation, which I don't know if there was, but it was just one of those Disney magic moments where I feel like the audience leapt to their feet. It was that emotionally visceral for everyone involved. I mean, it was so good.
Because you guys saw it in August.
Yeah.
It was August 24th, not 14th, August 24th. You guys saw it in the last, like, leg of it. So you're probably not wrong. I remember August performances. It was, if it wasn't a matinee, it was a standing ovation, and it was sold out every night.
Oh yeah.
It was incredible.
Wow. Well, how cool. And then, I mean, eventually you made the jump from Broadway to TV.
Yeah.
And I'm curious how that happened, specifically with Rise, which I would say is maybe more of your breakout role, but then more recently with Tiny Pretty Things, which was iconic.
Okay, wait. Before we get into Tiny Pretty Things, though, I do want to talk about Rise, because it does feel like a lost gem. It was like pre This Is Us, or like right when This Is Us was happening. So it kind of had that NBC emotional, dark, but still heartwarming vibe that like, when Friday Night Lights left the air, this kind of was picking up on it. But I'm still wondering why it didn't go on to have more seasons. But what was the process of you getting cast in Rise and starting that journey?
So I had been auditioning for Telsey for a long time, as most theater people do. But when I was auditioning, because I was mainly an ensemblist. And so I was pushing for these, for more TV film roles. I wanted to play roles now. I wanted to act. And the big reason I like really pushed for it was because during Aladdin, I was 3 weeks into the show and broke my foot.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So I was like, I can't do this forever. I really can't. So I talked to my team and I was like, I want to push more for TV film and like principal roles. So right before the broken foot, they were pitching me to Telsey all the time. So I was going in, you know, for their commercials or their new shows that were coming out or that they were trying to go for, or, you know, workshops, labs, readings, and I was getting them too. I was getting a lot more roles, mainly in readings, but I was still like, Telsey and I actually had a great relationship. And then next year, when pilot season struck, they were also getting the new pilots. And I was actually going ham in pilot season. I was really just like, they were sending me out for everything. And I was getting a couple callbacks. But the ultimate reason why I got Rise is because I had been auditioning for Hamilton since 2014, since I first moved to New York. This is before it popped off at all. And I actually had submitted for John Lawrence Phillip, but had only recently been seen for the ensemble. But I come in and I'm like, y'all don't know that I write my own raps. Like, I do this. This is my shit. And so I came in, they were like, do you have a rap for us? And I was like, say no more. And so I'm more in the style of like Busta Rhymes and Eminem. So I'm a quick rapper. And so when I go in, I'm like, yo, this is what I can do. Like, it's time for y'all to see me. And they did. So they kept calling me back whenever they would have their like, you know, 6 month casting call or whatever, or they would call me in for replacements. And so they called me in when they were starting their first tour. So you had Chicago, you had New York, and then the tour was going out and they were like, we'll bring you in. And I got all the way to final callbacks. It was a long ass day. I had seen Andy earlier that day for Bandstand, and I do the audition. They give me 50 pages of material because they wanted me to do Lawrence Phillip. And then they were like, can you do Jefferson as well? I was like, yeah, bitch, I can. So I go in, I do it, and it's me and three other guys in for John Lawrence. And I'm like, I nailed this. Like, what's up? And I don't hear anything back. They don't respond to my emails. They don't respond to my phone calls, nothing. And those two, one went on tour, one went to New York. And I was like, yo, for like, what am I doing wrong? Like,
yeah.
I come in, I make choices, I'm fully memorized on 50 something pages. I'm nailing the dance moves. What is it? And that was in October of 2016. February of 2017, I get an audition for Rise. And who else is on that team, on the producing team? None other than the producers of Hamilton.
Hmm.
And they had just seen me do everything. So I come in, I rap, I sing, I do the sides. I go for the producer, I go for the writer, I go for the director. And within 2 weeks, I book the role.
Wow.
And that's why whenever I teach or I do master classes, I always say every time you go in for an audition, you have to do it, and you have to do it at 110%, because, you know, some people are like, you know, you may not be right for this, but you'll be right for something. And, you know, a lot of times you're thinking that, okay, that's bullshit. That's not true, but I'll be damned if it's not true, because it literally happened.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why they had all three of us there, is because they knew that they were going, we want Robbie Thorne and we want two John Lawrence Phillips. and we got all three.
Wow.
And that's how I got it.
That's an amazing story. And I'm also thinking about how even during your Newsies audition process and your Hamilton audition process, these things don't happen magically. Sometimes they do. Like you go in and the next day you're booked and 2 weeks later you're on Broadway. But oftentimes, most times, it is hard work and it's a long waiting game, and perseverance and talent and just busting your butt will get you to where you're meant to be. And I think it's a testament to you just how hard you've worked that you've continued to, you know, book things over the last decade, you know?
I'm definitely trying.
Yes, yes. So then when Rise happened, did you guys film all of that? Like, so you booked it in like February, and then didn't it come out like the next winter or something like that?
Yeah. So we filmed the pilot in March. I actually got to, like, my 23rd birthday was on set. I was in the makeup room and celebrating my 23rd birthday on a NBC, my first NBC pilot. It was wonderful. So it was during pilot season, so it hadn't even been picked up yet. It got picked up in May, and then we had the summer, and then we were going back to camera on in September. So we had August to like rehearse for a couple of weeks so we can get a jump on things. And then we started in September, and it was all shot in New York, upstate, sometimes in the city, not all the time, actually rarely in the city. Yeah, in the city, also known as Brooklyn, you know, however you want to categorize that. But yeah, we filmed in Nyack. We filmed in, I think it was White Plains. It was either White Plains or Westchester. I think possibly both. But we filmed all over New York, and then it came out in March.
I've got to know what it was like to work with Rosie Perez.
I love that woman so much. She's so funny.
We worship her.
Okay, well, here's two things that you got to know about Rosie. When you start work, leave her the fuck alone. She is not a morning person, and she lets you know. She let us know, well, let everyone else know, not me, before we started the early morning stuff. And I didn't know that, but it was also my birthday. So I didn't, you know, I was excited. And then, but later that day, she was like, I just heard it was your birthday. Happy birthday. I was like, oh, thank you. Thank you, Rosie. That's the first thing you need to know about Rosie. She's not a morning person. Leave her alone. Let her have her moment in her glasses, get her makeup on, get her coffee. And she's the kindest person in the world. She's just a giving person. Other thing is this amazing story. I'll never forget it because it was episode 7 and we were fucking tired. We're sitting on stage and we're just chilling there, and they're like moving stuff around. This is like, I think it's easily hour 11 or 12, maybe 13. And we're all slap happy. We're trying to keep it together. We're trying to stay focused. Oh, yeah. And then all of a sudden you just hear this fucking voice on the side go, oh, sorry guys, I farted. I just didn't want to surprise anybody. And I went like, I was cackling. And that is how I knew. I was like, Rosie Perez is the gem that we don't deserve.
Oh my God. I mean, Broadway star.
Yeah.
The View co-host. And then of course Slade on The Flight Attendant.
Yeah.
Which was unreal.
I remember this funny tweet when Rise was airing. Someone tweeted like, Rosie Perez is weekly gunning for her best featured actress in a television series Tony Award. It was like, of course, not a Tony for TV, but that stuck with me every week because it was true. She was like, she had such conviction for making this, you know, musical happen. And oh my God, so fun. And then unfortunately, it didn't move on to have a longer life. Right. But then a couple years later, you book another arts related show with Tiny Pretty Things, which we've talked about mentioned by name a couple of times before. Right. But, you know, earlier, when you were talking about how you were a ballet major in school, cut to you then being the star of a ballet show, which, I mean, come on, you can't like plan for these things. That's so cool.
Well, I clearly have a type, and I'm just in teenage dramas, basically. You know, here's the thing. You can't plan for it, but you can prepare for it.
Mm.
When I was in college, I had circus class because musical theater and, you know, performance major.
Very Pippin revival energy right there.
Well, it was literally when the Pippin revival came out. So all of us were like, oh my God, they're doing that. And they're doing this. This is the circus that we just learned. Like, that's a mini tramp. Like, it was hilarious.
Oh, that's funny.
It was amazing. Yeah. But my circus teacher always said, keep filling your bag full of tricks.
Mm.
And I was like, all right, I got you. So, you know, when the time came for Newsies, it's like, okay, I got my tumbling. I've got my, you know, I've got my tapping. I've got that there. When it came time for Tiny Pretty Things, I've got my ballet. When it came time for Rise, I was like, I play football. I sing and I act. Like, my bag of tricks are here. And they also have gotten me a lot of opportunities because I am an avid student of music. So I learned how to play four instruments, and I want to continue to learn how to play those instruments and get better. And I think that's a testament, because again, it's a business and they want actors to be able to do everything, which is, I get it. You're trying to make more money, not spend more money.
Yeah.
They also want us to do more. And so with that, you got to be prepared. So you can't plan, but you can prepare. And I wish I'd have prepared more for Tiny Pretty Things, because I was not ready for that shit.
I mean, all of you were actual dancers.
Yeah.
And from what I've heard from TV is it's take after take after take of everything. I can only imagine, you talked about your ankles earlier.
Yeah.
Icing them all the time.
Yeah. Icing and physical therapy and Tiger Bomb and KT tape. What's hilarious is that I think it's in episode 2, there's a moment when the ballet teacher goes, that Andre Chicotte was late. It's either that or the first one. And there's this bright ass green KT tape on my arm. And of course, like, if you're a dancer, you're going to have stuff like that on you. And regardless if it's junk, it's like, this is so I can keep doing this shit. You know, for performance, I'll take it off. And the reason why it was on there is because my shoulder was fucked in that.
Oh my God.
During that time.
Wow.
So that was actually real. It was on there because I needed it, not because it was like, oh, this will look cool. I was like, I'm trying to hide it, but they're like, no, we want to see it. I was like, good, because this thing is wrapped.
I remember seeing that on different characters and stuff like that throughout and thinking, oh, this is very like accurate the way this is all done.
We were trying.
That's so funny. I've got to say, I actually really loved the show. It was like Pretty Little Liars meets
Black Swan.
Yes. There you go. That's the pitch for the show. And it was so good. And, you know, I was shook by the amount of like nudity going on. I guess I forgot that Netflix can have like the parental controls on it. But I mean, those sauna scenes were steamy. No pun intended.
I was like, sign me up for the Equinox steam rooms ASAP. We doing a Tiny Pretty Things role play moment.
Literally. While we were filming, we were like, we would be in the back being like, another fucking sauna scene. Like, really? We got another. I'm going to be okay with walking down the street naked at this point.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was a lot. I warned everybody. I was like, I warned everybody. I was like, it's aggressive. There's a lot on there.
Any chance they could to show like anyone's ass.
And they did. My ass was in the first episode and no one realizes it. But like when the pool scene happens and there's this one like bright white ass just swimming up the water. That's mine.
Oh, is it? Okay.
Yeah, it 100% is.
I clocked that ass and I was like, okay, going to IMDb right here to see who the bear ass is. No, it was so good. The show honestly had everything. It was like violent and drugs and affairs. Yep. And it also dealt with issues of race, though, and the dance world. And it was compelling. Yeah. I'll say that. It was a fun binge.
It was fun to do. Like, normally that's not my go-to watch, sure, you know, show, but even if it's not like normally my style, that show was so much fun to do. And those people are forever my family.
Yeah. You could tell the bonds are really there. Yeah. Who were you closest to in the cast?
Nabil and Oren, I'd say. That's being very nitpicky. I mean, because all of us were, I mean, we were all together every weekend, you know. Aww. I could hang out with every single person solo. And it was fine. I also was super close with the guy who played Mateo, Alex Ealing. And then Josh and Brennan and I and Alex would hang out. Some of us would go play basketball together. My dance partner, Claire, who played Esme, she and I are super close. I was super close with the core dancers, you know, just the one-liner people. Like, we all were a family on that show.
Oh, I love it. And of course, the iconic Madam.
Yes.
MILF storyline.
I was shook.
The show was actually just like porn fetishes, like anything shoehorned into the show. Sauna, MILF, yep. Teacher, student, like everything there. Imagine.
Gay, straight, ballet roommates.
All of it.
This is the marketing campaign now.
I know. Netflix can pay us and we will just pitch it in this way, because I'm like, wait, I want to watch again. You know what I mean? Isn't the guy who played Nabil a Broadway guy?
Michael Rosen. And he fucking books. He just booked something else. And I was like, talented. Fuck. Like, he just booked something else. And he was in the, I always call it the first one, but it's not the West Side Revival with you know, where it was like half English, half Spanish. He was in that
Josefina Scaglione. Yes.
Oh my God. I have to tell you a story about her after I brag about Michael, because it was the greatest in the world. Okay. So Michael, he did that. And then he also went on to do On the Town.
Oh, wow.
And then like right after that, he did Torch Song.
Oh, that's how I'd know him. Okay.
That's exactly right.
Yes, I remember.
Yeah. And so he just works. He's so fucking talented. He really is. The way he can transform into a character and the way he did Nabil, a lot of people thought that he was French and that he was from France and that he spoke French. Homie didn't speak a lick of it at all. But the girl who played Cassie Shore, her father is French. So she speaks beautiful French and fluently and all the time. So she was helping him with his accent and what emphasis to put on the words. And so there's this moment when they have their dream sequence, which is entirely in French. They were actually translating it back and forth between, you know, all of between each other and the writer. They were all three like in the works for that scene. And as you can tell, it's beautiful. It's beautifully shot. It's beautifully danced. It's beautifully spoken. It's amazing. That's one of my favorite scenes. And Michael is a testament to like what it is like to transform into a character, because he's so good.
Oh yeah. I love it.
Now my West Side, Josefina Scaglione. Yes. Sorry. I went and saw that revival. That was my second year in New York.
Okay,
and
cool.
That is where I first met Ryan Steele. He was 19 and I was in love, because that motherfucker could dance his ass off. And he was giving us a masterclass, and we were all gobsmacked by what he was able to do. And that night we're going to go see West Side Story. So we're going to go cheer him on, obviously, because he just did a class with us, blah, blah, blah. Afterward, we're at Stage Door. We're meeting everybody, and Josefina walks up and I was like, "You were so good." I was like, your voice is spectacular. And she was like, "Oh my God, thank you." She goes, "You're adorable. You're like, you're so cute." And I was like, "Y'all heard that shit, right? Y'all heard that." Like, she called me cute. And I was like, and she's beautiful. She is. Oh my God. She's gorgeous. So I've never run away from that. So Josefina, if you're watching this, I'll DM you. I'll slide into the DMs. Okay. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah. And of course, did you see Karen Olivo?
Of course.
Yeah.
Oh, of course. Unreal. She's amazing.
And that was also the Jeremy Jordan was the two-show Tony for that.
Right. So I've worked with damn near everybody in that cast now because I've done West Side Story and those people have moved on. So as a high schooler, to like look at these people that I like worshiped and be able to call them like colleagues and friends now is incredible. Jeremy was in that and someone else was in it. But I can't remember who it was the other Tony. And I think I've worked with him too. I have to like
Matt Kavanaugh originated it.
Right.
But I think then Matt Shingledecker took over.
Okay. That's what I thought it was. I think I saw Matt and not Jeremy.
Okay.
But there is this weird thing because Michael was in that. I actually saw Michael in that show as a child.
That's so wild.
Right. So yeah, I have a really close connection with that, with West Side Story and now Josefina Scaglione.
Yeah. Well, Damon, I have to break it to you, but you are going to be that to other people. Like I'm sure there are fansies and fans of the shows you've watched who are looking up to you, and they're going to be the young people in the show one day, and they're going to have that surreal moment. So it's a testament to you, because you are such a nice guy and so generous with your time and talent. So it's going to happen to you as well.
I really hope so, because that's going to be an amazing moment, because I know how it feels now and how I felt then. So when that actually happens to me, I might cry the first time. It's like, oh, I saw you in this and you inspired me to keep this going. And I'm so excited to work with you. And I'm going to bawl. I'm going to cry, because I know what that's like. I know how that feels. And if that happens, I'm going to be so excited. That's why I got into this business.
Mm-hmm. It's full circle. It'll be it's rewarding.
You have like the best energy. I could literally talk to you forever. Oh my God. But we are sadly wrapping up. So we like to end on a dose of drama.
Okay.
A little recommendation, something you want to rant about, rave about, tell a story, talk about the world news. I'm going to kick it off today because this came to me as I was putting this t-shirt on. The shirt says, sounds gay, I'm in. And people compliment me on it when I wear it. And I have to tell everyone the sad truth behind this t-shirt. Last summer, I got some targeted ads from this company called like That Sounds Gay, and they were looking for like brand reps. And anyway, my friend did it, and he was like, oh my God, you need to do it. You'll get like a discounted shirt, whatever, and they'll repost you on their Instagram. So I reached out. They were like, oh my God, yes, you should be one of our brand reps. They're like, we're going to post you on our Instagram and Facebook. You'll gain however many new followers. We'll reshare all of your photos, etc. So I buy the shirt. Dylan and I take this full photo shoot, me in the street, whatever. Yes. And also, I'll say it was at a time where I'm not follower hungry. It's not like I'm like an actor or anyone who has I don't need followers. But we were at a moment in the middle of last summer where we had just gotten turned down by a really famous Broadway actress who told us that we weren't popular enough for her to devote her time to the show. And that's drama. So everybody can think about who it might be who hasn't been on the pod yet. But anyway,
oh, Connor.
So we thought, okay, well, more followers could help us book. Like, this is a real thing, you know? Like, so I bought the shirt. I had my discount code, whatever, took the photo shoot, did it. And this company completely ghosted me, full scam. And I still get DMs from them all the time saying, do you want to be one of our brand reps, whatever? And I have since then been in touch with other friends who told me that the same thing happened to them. It's all a scam, that they want you to buy their shirts and they're promising you these things. And I, little old me, I fell for it because I was so naive then.
Looking at it, I'm like, why didn't you see that? But I guess, you know, you burn, you learn.
I was so hopeful, you know, it was like, and I wanted to prove that girl wrong and say, you know what, we can build followers, even if it's through phony brand reps telling you they're going to make you a star. I believed them. It was like that episode of Rugrats All Grown Up when Susie thought she was going to be a singer and she got a record deal and she gave all her money to this guy. And then she showed up at the label and it was deserted. Do you remember that episode?
Yes. I don't remember this at all.
Oh, I remember
devastation.
What a throwback moment, truly.
It must have really imprinted in my psyche, you know?
Maybe.
Anyway, the drama is I like this shirt and I get compliments on it. But if That Sounds Gay reaches out to you, they're a scam.
Yeah, they can kick rocks.
Yeah. Dylan, do you have a dose of drama today?
I do, because, you know, this might be coming live from Myrtle, this podcast. I don't know. But what I'll say is, you know, I made all these promises last summer when I was like stuck inside and thinking, when quarantine's over, I'm going to do everything. I'm going to get all the tattoos. I'm going to travel to all the places. And now suddenly I have to make good on those promises. And I'm like anxious about re-entering the world. And my drama is that I'm scared. And I would wish I still had the excuse of, sorry, there's a pandemic.
Right.
But I got to just stiff upper lip, go for it, and things will be good. But I'm just feeling a little anxious about it all.
Oh, damn. Well, good luck. Seriously.
Thanks, Damon.
Because Myrtle Beach is, you know, that's a southern, it's in South Carolina, right?
Yeah. South or North. One of the Carolinas. Yeah.
Most of my family is actually from North Carolina. So I've never actually been to Myrtle Beach, but everybody goes all the time.
Oh,
so
yeah.
You're going to have a blast. It's going to be fun. I hope you have a great time.
Thank you. Thank you. Do you have some drama, Damon?
I think I do.
Okay.
First off, I have to say, that lady who was like, you don't have enough followers. Fuck you, lady. Sorry. I'm sorry. I don't care. Like, you get mad at me all you want to. Like, fuck right off.
Yes.
Like, you don't have enough followers. If you have the time, you can fucking do it. Like, stop. Bitch the door.
Yep.
Like, fuck right off. I'm sorry. I don't have time for that kind of shit. I don't. Mm-hmm. And everyone's starting to hear my potty mouth this time. But like, in my head, see, now you can hear my Southern coming out because it's I'm getting upset. In my head, I'm going, that bitch clearly has never struggled in her life. She grew up with money, probably from Connecticut. I don't know why that's how that just makes sense. But like, that ain't none of my business. I ain't got time for it.
I agree. It makes me think like, I never want to be the person that thinks I'm too good for anything, you know,
because
like everyone started somewhere. I don't think you're ever too good to spend your time. I don't know. And I think like, I won't say more. I don't want to be shady, but
hell, I will. Let me do it. I'll tell you right now. I've had fans who have no following. I'm saying like in the 400s, whatever it might be, you know, there it's not, but they're like getting a podcast started, or they want to do an interview, and I've 100% done it. It's like, if I have the time, I'm going to do it. Why would you not do that? If we've learned anything about marketing or getting people on your side, like the election, you have to go to the little people. You can't just go for the big people. If you go for the the big people and only the big people, you're fucked.
If you don't visit Michigan and Pennsylvania, if you're only in New York and California,
like there's more people than those people, by the way. So that's my little drama, but I want to do one more.
I loved that, by the way.
Thank you.
I have no time for her. I don't care who she is. I have no time for you. And if I find out who it is, I'm going to read you like fucking Paris is burning. Period. That's period. Sorry.
Obsessed.
But also little tidbit of information. I'm not going to say names, but like, I didn't know this until a couple years ago. Everyone in the Broadway community is a slut. Everyone, every single person. I don't care. And I don't say slut because I don't slut shame, because I'm like, girl, get it in. I'm always a celebrator of getting it in, period. But everyone is a slut. And I love it. I say slut because it's like, I was a little slutty last night, or I was doing a little slut mess, you know, not a slut, because that's mean, but a little slutty. I'm down for that.
That's fun.
Everyone is. If you think they're like, no, I'm not like that. No, there's one person in this world that I've met, and she's as pure as like, I don't know. She's as a diamond, a real diamond. Like, she's just that pure. She's the only person in this world that is not slutty. Everyone else is slutty.
True. It's all true.
We said earlier, everybody wants to bang a newsie.
Mm-hmm.
Why do you think that is? Because everyone in Broadway
is a slut.
I love this raw realness that you're bringing to the pot. I feel like many people are afraid to speak the like common truths of the world, and I'm obsessed. You're right.
I used to be that way. I really did. Like the Rise years, basically. People are like, oh, there's kids watching. And then I'm like, yeah, but I also did Empire, where I fought 3 grown-ass women and beat the hell out of them. You know what I mean? Like, my work is my work, and I can still talk to kids and teach kids and but I can also be honest with them, you know, because when they become adults, they're going to say these words. You know, I'm not saying it to like elementary school kids, obviously, but like, right. You know, if you've seen 8th grade, you know that middle schoolers are ain't fucking playing. So I got to a point in my life where I was like, I can't pretend to be someone I'm not. I really can't. It makes me feel icky. I lose friends because they can tell I'm being fake. Mm-hmm. So this is who I am now. This is just who I am.
And we respect you for it, Damon.
And love you for it. You're an amazing person. Oh my God.
This has been so much fun. Thank you for giving us so much time and being so down to just hang out and chat.
Absolutely. I could do this another hour, truly. So
we'll have to have you back.
Please do.
For real. And everybody needs to follow Damon.
Sure.
And you can follow him at Damon_Gillespie on Twitter and at Damon J. Gillespie on Instagram.
I'm more active on Instagram.
Insta's the place. It's so fun.
It's fun.
So fun. And you can follow, if you're not already, follow at The Drama Podcast. Follow me at Connor McDowell. Dylan at Dylan McDowell. Dylan, do you like that I stole your social media plug moment?
Yes. I love it. We're sharing
you
today.
You asked, are you well?
I did, which is normally your moment. So we're just trading it off.
Exactly.
And Damon, thank you again. I am just blown away by you and everything. And I can't wait to see what else you're booked with, because it's only going to continue.
I hope so. And congratulations on a great podcast, guys. This was a lot of fun, and I'm so happy to be here, and I'm so glad that you guys were like hella cool to talk to, and you know, you just kept it 100. We always said keep it 100, you know. This was a lot of fun, and I hope that this podcast like takes off, and this is like your main source of income, because you guys deserve it.
From your lips, Damon.
Thank you so much.
Of course.
That means the world. It does.
Thank you. And Connor, I'll see you next time.
Drama.